You're very welcome to join me for this presentation that's focusing on using mindfulness for self-care. My name's Tim Jordan. So in this session, what I plan to do is to offer a framework that gives you an experiential introduction to how we can use mindfulness in the context of counselor self-care. And around that experiential introduction, to be offering opportunities to get a sense of key theoretical concepts that are relevant to applying and adapting mindfulness for self-care. By the end of the session, I hope you'll have had an opportunity to experience some mindfulness practices and see if they would fit for you as possibilities to work with in the future. To also think about how you could integrate mindfulness practices into both your kind of personal and professional life for ongoing self-care. And then to think about how mindfulness resources could also fit into self-care in the long term so that you could then maybe assess other mindfulness resources that you can find out there to see whether they would fit for you as well. So how do we make sense of all the different options in this kind of mindfulness practice world there is? So an opening question maybe to ask is why practice mindfulness for counselor self-care? It's maybe useful to say that in my own experience, I began to practice mindfulness many years before I began to do my counseling training. And I found it so helpful in my counseling training to have that already existing mindfulness practice to draw on. I found that meant that the stresses that always come with learning something new, and then the ongoing stresses at times of being in practice, I've got a framework that helps me reduce the stresses that come with that and increase my resilience. And there's research evidence now increasing that suggests that mindfulness is one of the ways in which we could help ourselves have more resilience in the face of the often quite stressful situations we might find ourselves in as counsellors, whether in training or in practice. Another, I think, really interesting thing about mindfulness is that it seems to have a lot of overlap already with counselling in particular and person-centered counselling specifically. Although the language is different, a lot of the concepts are very, very resonant and kind of congruent with each other. And in mindfulness practice, we're aiming to be present with what's here now. And that's so similar to our sense working with people as counselors. How do we be really present with them as they are in all the different ways they can be with us through a counseling session? And the core conditions, again, are very overlapping with concepts in mindfulness. So we have notions of empathy, which are very overlapping with notions of compassion and self-acceptance, which overlaps again with UPR and the notion of being willing to be non-judgmental in our interactions. So when we notice those judgments, can we hold them lightly? That's very much part of mindfulness practice. And also mindfulness is about being open to what's here, which is very congruent with the notion of congruence. Can we be present with what's here as it is rather than trying to make it different to how it is? So I think if you kind of dip your toes into mindfulness practice, or you may already have found that actually there is so much similarity here with mindfulness and how concepts in counselling link to that. I think also something I find mindfulness really helpful for is the transition from one client to another. So in those gaps between sessions, I've built up a repertoire really of helpful short practices that allow me to, in a way, frame that previous client's kind of interaction with me in that previous space, and then to have a baseline that helps me move into interacting with my next client. So I'm not so kind of caught up in maybe thoughts about what happened before, and if there are significant things I need to maybe think about, take to supervision, then I can kind of hold those more in the background so they're not too intrusive into the next session. Again, lots of different approaches will help us do this, but mindfulness is one of the ways we can kind of develop that capacity. So another thing to explore maybe is what is mindfulness? So mindful awareness has been described as paying attention to what's happening in the present moment in the mind, body, and external environment with an attitude of curiosity and kindness. So again, maybe this is where you'll already be seeing those overlaps with those person-centered concepts. This is actually quite a big ask, really. It's not something we can just switch on, particularly the curiosity and kindness elements. That's something that takes time to develop in the places where we struggle in life, where we may have a lot of past experiences, where we're quite harsh on ourselves. Then to bring curiosity and kindness to those places is no easy thing at times. So mindful awareness is something we gradually cultivate and grow, and it becomes a kind of deeper experience as we work with that. Another definition or description is knowing directly what's going on inside ourselves and outside ourselves, moment by moment, to see the present moment clearly. What is important around all of this, though, is that I think a core person-centered value to say that my experience of mindfulness will be different to yours. And it's very easy if we do explore all the different places mindfulness is talked about to get an impression maybe there's a way that mindfulness should be happening or a right way to do it or some sense of mindfulness just being this way and not another. And if we come from this from a person-centered point of view, your experience of mindfulness will be unique. It'll be unique this moment, and then practicing it a bit later may be different again. So there's a freshness to this that we'll be experiencing it differently in different contexts, in different times of our lives. And so, along with that, I think it's really important to think about, well, how does mindfulness fit with me? What bits kind of resonate and seem helpful and maybe take me towards my growing edges in a helpful way? And what areas, not sure about, doesn't kind of fit with me right now. And just because someone else says this really helps, this may not be the kind of practice that helps you. To unpack that a little bit more, I think is really helpful to think about how mindfulness practices are what we do to cultivate mindful awareness. So those descriptions before were really more about mindful awareness, this sense of being present with what's here now, with those attitudes of curiosity and kindness. Whereas the practices are what we do to cultivate mindful awareness or mindfulness awareness, if you prefer. But often, when we see the term mindfulness, it's not clear whether what's been talked about is the practice or the awareness. And sometimes it's quite overlapping. So there are many different types of mindfulness practices, and these practices may suit you at different times and different places. And some of them may be really very unhelpful for you right now and just not right for you at all. At another time or situation in your life, they might be kind of really helpful. And I think another thing that you may discover as we do this kind of exploration of mindfulness is you'll find there's aspects of what you do already that have a lot of overlap with mindfulness practice. And in the context of counselling, grounding practices are a really good example of that. So many counsellors will work with clients or may use them themselves to help in times of emotional intensity, to help in a way unhook from the overwhelming qualities of those emotions and refocus on what is present around us right now. And maybe in the context of client work, the sense of the safety and the therapeutic relationship, if that's there, to refocus back on that. So that there's a sense of holding what feels overwhelming through using grounding practices. It's outside the scope of this discussion here. But this notion that different mindfulness practices may suit you at different times in different places has been something of a, I suppose, a, an area of research that's been rather overlooked in the for the first decade or so of research into how mindfulness was used in clinical contexts. And what that led to is that there's been many people who've had really quite difficult experiences of using mindfulness practices that were really very unsuitable for them at that time. The cultivation of mindful awareness could really be seen as helpful in all kinds of different therapeutic contexts, because when is it not helpful if we're wanting to work with significant kind of issues in our lives, to have more awareness of what those issues are and to bring curiosity and kindness to the experience of working with that. However, the practice used to cultivate those qualities may not be suitable. A really good example of this is people who may have body-based trauma, who may have had intense shaming experiences linked to their body, been asked to do body-based mindfulness practices or breath-based mindfulness practices, where often we feel the intensity of our emotions in our chest and belly area. And if we bring our attention in to these areas to focus on the experience of the breath in these places, then that may actually take us closer in to some of the very unsettling experiences we might be having. So the aim of a mindfulness practice is to help us feel more steady might be lost if the focus for the practice isn't one that is essentially safe, feeling safe for you at that time. So please do, all the way through any mindfulness practice that you're investigating, is be asking that question, well, is this right for me? And to trust your sense of that at any one time, and stop if it doesn't seem right for you. Really interesting material to bring to supervision or to personal therapy, if that's the case, or to talk over with a mindfulness teacher. If you're interested in that strand, then if you look for trauma-sensitive mindfulness, then you'll find a lot of interesting material around that. And I can put a link in to the resource area that will take you into some of the lead authors in that field. Okay, so let's dive a little bit more into some of the key concepts of what it means to practice mindfulness. Now, this model of how we can understand the practice of mindfulness has grown up through the work of myself and a number of colleagues over about 12 years or so, where we wanted to bring as kind of easily accessible language as possible to the practice of mindfulness and to root that in our everyday experiences. So if we think about what happens when we practice mindfulness, and I'll give you an opportunity to give this a go shortly, is that we choose to focus our attention typically on a physical sensation, something we can see, hear, taste, touch, smell, feel in the body, such as movement, whole range of different possible physical sensations can be the focus for our attention. What happens whenever we choose to focus in on something, though, is our attention will get hooked. Something will catch our attention and our attention will get carried off elsewhere. This is built in. It's the feature. It's how we're supposed to work, because there are systems we have that work so quickly, so fast, that they spot potential threats and rewards before we're consciously aware of them. And those systems can grab our attention and take them somewhere that seems important to those systems to highlight. And so we're just gone there, and it's only after the event of our attention shifting that we can notice that's happened. So a loud bang will take your attention to that loud bang through these systems that are there to protect us and to identify potential rewards as well. Similarly, maybe the smell of coffee, if you like coffee, might take your attention off to that before you've even kind of fully registered, you've unhooked from what you were previously focusing on. So what mindfulness practice is about is actually spotting when your attention has been hooked. And that's the bit that translates into the clinical benefits of mindfulness, because it's when we get caught up in mental loops, particularly maybe loops of kind of brooding, rumination, or anxious anticipation, that our well-being can often be undermined through the sticky thoughts that we're getting caught up in and become dominant in our awareness. So if we can spot that's happened, maybe, which is a watching kind of part of this, recognize what actually has hooked your attention with a little bit of kind of interest, curiosity. Yeah, that was a thought there that just hooked my attention. And then the other critical part of the practice of mindfulness is unhooking. Can we unhook from what grabbed our attention, hooked it, and then choose to refocus on our chosen focusing anchor? So the point of the anchor is to set us up to get hooked, so we can then spot what's hooked our attention, to then notice what grabbed our attention, and then maybe unhook from that. And hopefully, having unhooked from that, refocus back into our focusing anchor. And the practice of mindfulness is to repeatedly go around this cycle. We could call it an attention cycle. We just loop round and round and round again. So the more times we loop round, great. The more repetitions of that practice of cultivating our capacity to spot what hooked our attention and to unhook from them. The focusing in is beneficial because it develops our capacity to notice the fine detail of what's changing with our senses, and that can be helpful too. But the actual bit that makes it a mindfulness practice is the spotting and unhooking in particular. And around that, bringing this kind of attitude of easygoing curiosity, kind of interest in, oh yeah, been hooked again. What's it like to unhook from that? So to kind of re-emphasize that, unhooking practice might be a better description of what mindfulness practice is all about, because often it's easy to think the point of it is focusing in and keeping our attention on something, when actually that's just there to set us up to be able to easily spot those hooks and then hook from them. And the interesting thing about this is, and I like this kind of notion of unhooking, is because it really makes it clear some of the background hooks that might be there that often come into sharp focus when we practice mindfulness that may not always make it an easy practice. So for instance, a kind of background criticism that comes in about not being able to do stuff, failing at stuff, might come in through practicing mindfulness, where we start to pick up on notions of, I'm not getting this right, I'm not practicing mindfulness right. And can we spot that kind of inner mental process of that background self-criticism, these introjects, these conditions of worth that are coming in to act as subtle hooks to take us away from what we're noticing right now? So one of the longer term ways that mindfulness seems to have its therapeutic action is that it helps us get a new relationship to these background kind of drives that might be there. And the impact of that is that it can make a huge difference being less bothered by and having more perspective on the stressful stuff that's going on in your mind or around you. So when a thought comes in that might previously have just grabbed your attention, take you off for a long ruminate or bit of anxious kind of worrying about it, then you can notice that's happened a bit sooner and maybe build your ability to unhook from that and refocus on something else that may help you get more perspective on that. And in particular, refocusing on what matters to you in that situation and acting on it. So overall, the result can be that what may otherwise hijack your attention and build up to quite kind of an unpleasant period, really caught up in kind of negative thoughts and feelings, we can kind of notice that a bit earlier maybe and refocus so those have less dominance in our awareness. It's not that they're gone. We're not suppressing anything. We're just they're just becoming more background than foreground. And that can make a huge difference. So that was all a bit theoretical. So what might be quite nice is to do something more kind of practical to get a feel of that. And we can do this, I think, quite nicely through doing what we could call a mindful sipping practice. So now would be a good time, if you don't happen to have a drink available, to go and get one. Hot, cold, any container, little bit, a lot, doesn't matter, just something you can drink. And if drinking isn't possible for you right now, having something you can just moisten your lips with actually would work just as well. Okay, so there's a longer version of this practice available on the resource page. What I'd like to do here is just kind of dip into a somewhat shorter version, just to give you the opportunity of tracking what's happening to your attention with the different physical senses that are available as we initially sit with a drink, although you're very welcome to stand or be lying down or any other position you happen to be in. To then take a sip. And notice what that's like, if that's okay for you, adapting around that if you can't swallow or sip or swallow at this particular time. And then pausing just to kind of savor what that experience was like briefly. Notice what kind of residual sensations are left. In doing this practice, you might really engage with it, or this might be one of those ones you think, not so much for me. But either way around, there'll be opportunities to see what happens with your attention as you focus in on what you can physically sense and then unhook from that. So, in that first part, it's kind of sitting with the drink. What's it like to hold the drink container? And notice what stands out as you hold that drink container. First feelings of contact. Temperature, touch, texture might be what you're looking at as well. If it's fizzy, might be what you're hearing, who knows? And as you hold that drink, maybe just check in to what you can notice around you. Maybe find something you can see. And really focus in on the colour, the shape, the shading, any movements as you look at that particular object. Just something, doesn't matter what, nearby or distant that you can focus on. It may well be my voice that's done it, or something else could have done it, but something's likely to hook your attention away from being as fully engaged with what you're looking at. And when that happens, can you notice when something's hooked your attention? Could be a passing thought or image, memory, could be other sounds, something happening in your body. Who knows, people around you. Something's hooked your attention, and maybe you can just briefly notice, yeah, it was a one of them. It was a thought, a feeling, body sensation, something. It's not worth spending time over. It's a brief as kind of just, yeah, it was that, or moving on if it's not clear. But then noticing what it's like to then unhook your attention from what's hooked it and focus back in on what you're looking at there. And then maybe within an instant, it's gone again. I'm speaking again, probably interrupting you. Could be even thoughts of irritation. You're not shut up and let me do it. Who knows? So noticing how your attention gets hooked, when it gets hooked, and then focusing back in on hooking each time you notice that's happened. You could do a similar thing for listening. So you could now choose to notice what it's like to shift your attention from what you're looking at to what you can hear, and even notice that experience of shifting the focus from one sense to another, I should say, assuming these senses are available to you. And you pick out a particular sound to focus in on and do the same thing, noticing the details as you focus in. Then when your attention gets hooked, noticing that's happened and coming back once more as you unhook to refocus on that particular sound, if it's still there, swapping to another sound if it's not. And I'll leave a gap to do that. And then maybe noticing what it's like to focus now on the feeling of contact with that drinks container. And again, tracking the sense of I was listening, and now my inner awareness is focusing my attention on what I'm sensing there, maybe my hands as I hold that container. The sense of how our attention can foreground a different part of what we're experiencing right now. And maybe pick out something in particular you can notice. Could be temperature, could be contact, who knows, your hands could be holding it still or moving, whatever you prefer. Again, what's it like to focus in on that particular part of what you're experiencing there, holding the container? Could be what's under just one thumb or finger, who knows. Then when your attention's hooked away, to notice that. And to an easygoing, unhurried way, bring your attention back once more to what you're choosing to focus on there. You might have noticed that some of that felt easier with one sense compared to another. Some different situations, different times, just how we built. Some people really into looking, some listening, some holding, some a mixture. And maybe notice what happens if you slowly lift the container up to your mouth and maybe just kind of linger at your lips. So notice that kind of first contact there. Even just kind of holding that there may trigger all kinds of, well, I just want to drink. So there could be all sort of interesting thoughts that get triggered that you can unhook from just with kind of lingering with the container there and then taking a sip. Notice the experience of having that sip, the changing temperature, taste, texture, swallowing as soon as you need to, maybe noticing the sensations that come with swallowing. And with what you're noticing there in your mouth, again, can that be the focus for your attention? So when your attention gets hooked by something, when you notice that's happened, possibly acknowledging, oh yeah, that just caught my attention, and then bringing your attention back as you unhook, back into what you're noticing there in your mouth, if that's a comfortable place to be paying attention. And then finally, just kind of lingering with savouring what's there, just noticing the ongoing, maybe slowly reducing sensations. They're kind of lingering, having taken that sip, some point it can feel a bit of an effort to keep coming back to what you're noticing there, and you can sort of refresh the whole experience by maybe focusing back in on the feelings of holding the container and then of moving it up to your mouth, taking another sip or a gulp. The thing doesn't have to be a sip. So you're having more opportunities to cycle through each of those stages in whatever order, what feels right for you. And you might want to continue to do that for a bit before pausing the video here, before coming back into the next part of the presentation. So having done that, maybe reflecting on each time you found your attention wandering off, as I assume it probably did, you usually have to have done years of training, very specific types of training to have attention that stays put for longer than 10 seconds or so. And many people don't have any particularly good reasons to do that. Certainly I haven't done that. But what was that like to notice? Yeah, my attention got hooked by something. Did you find you could spot what hooked it? How was it to bring your attention back, unhooking to what you were focusing in on with that kind of focusing anchor, the physical sensation you're working with? I find this practice really useful. Because the great thing about drinking from water, water bottle, drinks container, hot drink, in all kinds of different situations, is that many of us in social situations where it's acceptable to have a drink, take that sip, and in that time you can pause, refocus, re-engage. And with practice, the time for me to hold the cup, take a sip, savor that, put that back down. I've been unhooking all the way through that, focusing on what I'm physically sensing as I'm putting it down, giving myself a little pause to re-engage with what's happening around me. So it can become a very fast mindfulness practice, grounding practice that's really helpful. Interestingly as well, that it can be used in a therapeutic context for people who are in panic states, because when we sip, when we drink, it takes us into a different physiological state that has a different set of controls over breathing. So when we drink something, it pauses our breathing. And if you think about a lot of the breathing-based approaches to working with panic states where there's hyperventilation, it's about lengthening the breath to let the carbon dioxide levels come back up again. And sipping multiple times does that without kind of consciously knowing you're doing it. So you're building in this settling process. There's lots of social engagement. So if you're doing that in company with someone, you can really feel that social connection, which can be very steadying. And it's a whole familiar behavior pattern. You just kind of come out of one behavior pattern and you're shifting into another one. Ah, I'm out of the panic behavior. I'm now into the drinking something behavior. I'm not saying that's, you know, a complete shift, but it just helps tip the balance maybe away from getting stuck in those kind of loops that happen in the panic state. I wanted to give that example of mindful sipping practice as an example of how we can weave mindfulness into all kinds of different everyday experiences. And if you want to do that, then just think about your day from waking to sleeping. In fact, the Mindfulness in Schools project has this lovely phrase for practicing in bed called meditation. So they get kids to practice a bit, kind of under the duvet or whatever, just focusing in onto the sensations there. But anything that stands out, that's kind of vivid, that's ideally pleasant, or at least not unpleasant to do, gives us the opportunity to focus in on to one or more physical sensations involved in that activity. And whatever you choose is now the focusing anchor. You focus in on those, knowing your attention will be hooked. That's the point of mindfulness practice. You then, when you've noticed you've been hooked, unhook from that and focus back in on that chosen sensation. I think when you're learning mindfulness, though, it's really important to only do as much as you're interested in. As soon as you start to force yourself to do more than you want to, because it's good for you, or you have to, you ought to, or some such reason, you're really getting into your conditions of worth as the drivers of that particular part of the practice now. Whereas what we're wanting is this kind of open place of kind of warm interest, gentle curiosity. Yeah, that sit there, that focusing in on the feeling of buttering that piece of toast or listening to the kettle boil or whatever it might be, the feeling of the shower blowing over my body is in the morning. I'm interested in that for so long, prepared to practice for so long, but there comes a point when it's kind of getting in the way that I normally do that thing. And at that point, it's a mindful moment to notice, I've had enough of this, I'm just going to focus on something else, do my normal thing. You can always do more at another time, but I think just stopping at that point is important. This could be a point to pause the video and think what sensations are available to you when you're with a client and how you could use this focus for a mindfulness practice in session. So when you're with a client, think about what physical sensations would be available that you could have that would allow you to still be engaged with that client. If you're there in person, you're probably going to have to keep looking in your client's direction, so a visual focus may not be so good. But common examples might be the feeling of the feet on the floor, or your sitting bones in the chair, or your breath moving your body, or feelings of contact in your hands. Could be just either whether resting in your lap or holding something. Clearly, we've just been doing that sipping a drink, which can be a great one anyway if you have a practice where both you and your client have a drink available. I suggest giving one of these a test drive and seeing what it's like to do that when you're out and about. Maybe, I don't know, you're buying something from a checkout. Can you have some of your attention in that particular anchor, maybe the feeling of your feet on the floor or sensations in your hands as you're interacting with that person? This has the advantage of setting you up with a learned response with that particular anchor that you find helpful. That means you get more and more able to have an awareness of that anchor whilst also fully engaged with your client and what they're saying and how they're kind of acting with you, all those cues coming from them. Some people call this balanced awareness or even 50-50 awareness, although how you put a number on it, I don't know. But this sense of, yeah, I've got a sense of being here in the room through that anchor that I'm occasionally dipping in on, and I'm also there with my client. And what's often communicated from people when I do training in this is that people in the client role will often find when the counsellors become established and familiar with using an anchor in that way, there's a sort of steadiness communicated that feels like they can hold their feet, stand their ground, even in the face of quite intense emotion. And for me, I find it's actually a mixture of the feeling of my breath and the feeling of my feet on the floor are what I find helpful. That doesn't mean any particular position. I might have my legs crossed, so it's just one foot on the floor. There's no kind of right where we have to sit to do this. But this sense of, yeah, I'm here in this room right now, and I'm with my client who's going through maybe a really traumatic reliving of something, or maybe is sharing really quite challenging things that may bring a lot of safeguarding issues. So it's tending to make my mind want to go off and do planning rather than being there with them as they are now. So I'm dipping into those physical anchors just to help hold steady in the face of what's kind of happening and being with them rather than my or my mental reactions. They're there in the background, but they're just not dominating as much. So I'm unhooking from those and coming back to my client. Interestingly, research around this as well also suggests that in being more embodied in this way, tracking our body sensations, particularly around the breath and the torso, that we are focusing in on where we get our cues about how our client is. These empathic cues seem to be communicated through our embodied reactions to our client. And that's happening in these pre-conscious systems that we access them through our observation of our own body reactions to someone. That sense in a way of the parallel process, we might feel our gut starting to tense up and we might be kind of gently inquiring into our client's experience. Well, is there anything right now that you're feeling kind of anxious about? Is there anything, anxiety underneath? What's there for you right now? In picking a focusing anchor that's right for you, I think it helps to understand what constitutes an anchor that's more helpful than others. We focus on what we can physically sense. And the reason for that being helpful for most people is that it's the passing thoughts, images, memories that often are the most potent hooks that take us away. Even things like pain or a loud noise, those are there and maybe a hook, but it's often then our thoughts that we put on top of those that keep us away from what we're choosing to pay attention to before. So the worry that that pain isn't going away or will that noise ever stop might become the more dominant hook rather than that more physically based distraction. And so by having something we can physically sense, that creates a contrast with mental experience. If we're to choose a thought as an anchor, it's really hard to determine when that slipped into thinking about that thought. Whereas if we have something physical like the sip of the liquid in our mouth when we take a drink, it's pretty clear when we're reminiscing about the last time we drank that somewhere on our holidays or something. And when we're in with, it tastes like this right now. That's what I'm here with physically right now. That gives a contrast. Along with that, what we want is a neutral or pleasant anchor. While unpleasant or painful sensations are very hooking, they also activate our system. They get our stress systems going. And that isn't so helpful if what we want to do is steady ourselves. And finally, something that's vivid for you is helpful, something that stands out. So when your attention has been hooked, you can come back to that more easily. One of the reasons a lot of people struggle with many mindfulness practices is that the anchor that's been suggested is vague for them. It's hard to spot. And if you're in the middle of a really huge amount of mental turmoil, having some vague, easily lost, kind of feeble sensation somewhere to come back to can be really difficult as a practice, whereas something more intense can be really helpful. In fact, heat and cold often are quite good ways of having as anchors in those situations, or movement. Having moving something often makes it more vivid. And for many people, body sensations and breath sensations are really vague. So standard mindfulness practices can just feel like, what? I'm not noticing a thing here. Whereas maybe for them, listening or looking at something or tasting something could be much more more active. So what kind of things could you choose? Sounds often very good. Something you can see, an object you can feel with your hands, contact points, soles of feet, sitting bones, the back in your chair can be quite a nice one, sitting. Feeling of your body moving at your nostrils with your breath, or your belly, or your back. Moving as you do something can be really helpful. Lots of people's main mindfulness practice is movement-based practice. or some mixture of these. Clearly, in different situations, like a counselling situation, some of these will be more or less helpful. But it can give you an idea of the possibilities of all the different anchors we can choose. And the more we use an anchor, the more vivid it becomes, because our brain starts highlighting as something that's potentially useful. So finally, kind of having voyaged through all of that, just to further re-emphasize, to do mindfulness practice means getting hooked. Something will hook our attention and take our attention away, and we want that to practice mindfulness so that we can repeatedly notice we've been hooked and unhook from that. And it's these skills that make mindful awareness relevant in your life, because it's when we're out about doing things and something happens that just kind of overtakes us, hijacks us, and we're kind of gone on some mental loop of some sort. That's typically when we're in those kind of points of struggle in life. And if we can spot, ah, I've been hooked, and even just briefly refocus back in on something we can physically sense to unhook from that, that can be so helpful. In addition, there's a reality check that comes in with this. One of the wonderful things we have as human beings is the capacity to imagine, and that our inner mental life, our body treats it as if it's real and happening now, which makes our imagination so vivid when we're wanting to plan new things, go back over fond memories. But it's also what can really haunt us if we have traumatizing, overwhelming images, thoughts, memories, that when they're playing out again can feel completely overwhelming, or been lost in kind of anticipatory panic over something. When that happens, we're kind of in, we're foregrounding our mental experience of the world. If we can shift our focus to what we can physically sense, then what we're foregrounding is hopefully the fact that maybe our physical situation right now is safe, or at least not a situation of imminent danger. If it is, then these are wise reactions and we need to do something about all of that. But assuming the reactions are more in the kind of mental world rather than the physical world, then refocusing on what we can physically sense is a kind of reality check. As we foreground neutral or pleasant sensations, we just catch our breath and bring those stress reactions down a little bit. And that often brings in kind of more perspective taking, more of a sense of the big picture of what's going on, rather than being led by that first kind of immediate reaction. As we touched on before, there are sneaky mental hooks that can come in, such as I'm useless at mindfulness because I can't focus a mind, or my mind's too busy. I rarely meet anyone who doesn't say that of their own mind. But this is a hook. Weirdly, you can have your mind telling you, I'm not practicing mindfulness now, and I'm totally useless at this whenever I've done it before, so I'll never do it again. And that's actually a moment of mindful awareness, because you're noticing, ah, I've been hooked by those thoughts in my mind. And come back to what you're physically sensing, allowing that thought to be in the background, that might still be bringing a very strong sense of, this isn't mindfulness, you're not doing it. But there you are, unhooking from that thought, focusing back into what you can physically sense. So you are practicing it, whatever your mind is saying. Another common thought about mindfulness is that I can't be doing this right because I don't feel relaxed. And that's a really sneaky hook that says it should be different to how it is. Mindfulness practice is often not easy. The effective skill building practice can feel an effort. It can feel like you're attention is in glue with maybe a really fond memory that you know kind of has come to you, or some unpleasant thought or something you have to do that feels a huge pressure to it. Can you unhook from that even briefly to focus back in on something you physically sense? That can take a couple of seconds to do. If it really is that important, you could then choose to re-engage with that particular mental hook that had come in with those strong imperatives to engage in it. But you've kind of shown where the kind of balance of power, if we want to say, is in this, that I've chosen to unhook from that, and now I'm choosing to re-engage in that rather than out of nowhere this thought came to me and I'm just carried off with it, come what may. There's times in our lives when we don't have much of a sense of that choice, absolutely. And it maybe we have to do other things to give ourselves that sense of choice. But where that there's a little bit of that choice available, then if we can practice it, that sets us up for being more able to make that choice in the future. And it's a bit like physical exercise. If you're not particularly into physical exercise, you might be doing it because you know, well, if you do regularly physical exercise, then there's things you can do more easily, like going upstairs or playing a particular sport or messing around with the dogs or the kids or whatever it could be. If we're really unfit, then some of those things aren't so possible for us, maybe, or not so easy. But actually doing the exercise may not be pleasant. The benefit comes after. And it's the same with mindfulness practice. Having said that, there are times when mindfulness practice can be amazingly relaxing and it can bring a real sense of ease in the middle of very difficult circumstances. But if we're practicing to be relaxed, we're actually making that a hook right from the start that's going to be there in the background saying, well, you're not relaxed yet. Got to do more. This isn't working. Not relaxed yet. Whereas actually, maybe the unhooking from that will bring some sense of ease, relaxation after the practice. So, just as we're kind of moving towards the end of this, just think about mindfulness practice possibilities. So, in session, then we can use mindfulness to help us steady ourselves and be in psychological contact, to be really there with our clients and feel able to kind of go with the waves that come through maybe more intense times in that practice while still kind of holding our seat, holding steady. And here the choice of anchor is quite restricted to what fits with being engaged with your client. Clearly, if we're doing things like telephone counselling, you could be a particular object that, like holding a drink, that particularly pleasant and good anchor, or all kinds of other options are open to you. And then between sessions, so between this session and the next, if we can build an experience of a mindfulness practice that fits there, even if it's just 30 seconds or a minute, then it can be really helpful to unhook from all that went on in the previous session, get a kind of baseline sense of where you're at, whatever that might be. And then, so when you're moving into working with your next client, any movements in your inner sense of yourself away from that baseline, probably more to do with how you're responding to that particular new client than the one in the previous session. It's also really interesting to find these places as you unhook what feels hard to unhook from. And that can be great stuff to bring to supervision or into personal therapy or journaling. Yeah, that was so hard to let that aspect of that session go. In this context, there's more choice of anchor and with more practice options. And the more you do any particular practice, the more time efficient that can become. So it will easily fit into quite a short gap between clients. One of the ones I'll be mentioning is a three-stage pause, and there's details of how to do that later on. Out of sessions, even more scope, widest possibility, different forms of practice. One I'd really suggest you explore is mindful walking or mindful moving. Many people find that really helpful, and naturally, a lot of people do that through just having a walk. It really fits well with practicing mindfulness during parts of a walk we do, or just moving from one place to another. And there'll be an audio available linked through the resource page to go through that. I just want to briefly outline a typical mindfulness practice you can do where you're doing just mindfulness. You're taking time out to practice a bit of mindfulness. And you can see, hopefully, how almost any anchor can fit into this. As I mentioned before, what could be also helpful about this is you notice these sticking points. What was kind of keeping me there with the past client that's hard to let go of? So, three stages to this three-stage pause, surprisingly. The first is checking in, noticing what hooks around. So maybe if I've come out of that client, this could be in any situation, but maybe having just been with that client, what's around for me mentally? It's still going on, thoughts, feelings, images, memories. What about physically? What am I feeling in my body? What's my breath like? Muscles like? The physical sensations present? Any reactions in my body to what went on before? What about around me? What's the surroundings? Sounds, what I can see? Anything kind of catching my attention there? And having noticed these, then in a way we recognize, yeah, these are the hooks that are present. These are the things likely to grab my attention when I'm gone to the next stage. Can I allow them to be in the background for the time of this practice? And that could be just 30 seconds worth of doing that. It always takes longer to speak it than to do it. And then some unhooking practice, choosing a focusing anchor, noticing when I'm hooked away from that, maybe by that stuff I was spotting before, maybe other stuff. And then having noticed what's hooked me, unhooking from that and refocusing back in. I always like to notice if there's any sneaky hooks that are telling me this should be different to how it is now. I should be different to how I am now. And that can really open up this sense of how we're trying to kind of wear some mask or be some particular way, rather than that sense of kind of genuineness of being how we are right now, which may sometimes not be in the best of places, but okay enough to be moving on to our next client. And then checking out. Broad sensory awareness. What can you notice? Maybe something you can see, something you can hear, maybe feelings of contact with your body. There's no particular order to this. Maybe they're moving. It's nice if you can to stretch, even yawn. It shifts you into the resting, digesting system. Could then go into another cycle of those stages if you wish to loop around them again. This used to be called a 3-minute pause or 3-minute breathing space when it was just focused on the breath. But some people aren't that into the breath and maybe we want shorter or longer than 3 minutes. So typically 2 or 3 minutes when we're used to this could be the time scale, this kind of practice. But it could be shorter or longer than that. In terms of resources, Sitting Together is a fantastic book. I really recommend that. There's a link there to some of the meditations that are associated with that book. There's all kinds of free mindfulness practice available. Insight Timer has lots of free ones. SoundCloud has lots of free ones. They're on YouTube. There are apps. There's all kinds of stuff to use. All the way through choosing what suits you, be thinking about, yeah, does this fit into my life? Is this anchor one that I find helpful to work with? Is the time scale right? Are there any kind of oughts, shoulds, musts, have to be's being sneakily put in with the way that practice has been delivered that's kind of making you feel you need to do it like someone else does it, rather than say, no, I'm going to practice mindfulness the way I practice mindfulness, and it's a voyage of discovery, an ongoing voyage, how we discover our own form of mindfulness practice. I've put some audio files linked to the practice I've mentioned here on a SoundCloud channel. There's a link on the slides here, but also be in the resource page. And then takeaways from this. So I think it's helped to think of mindfulness practice as an unhooking practice. We're training our skills to spot when our attention has been hooked and training our skills of then unhooking from that so we can refocus on what matters to us most here and now. If we can find a vivid, neutral, pleasant sensation as a focusing anchor, that makes practice easy, or at least easier. And whether that's an anchor that's right for this situation, but not an anchor that's right for another situation, you'll discover as you experiment with all of this. So there's no one anchor that fits everyone in every situation. The more frequently you do a mindfulness practice in a given context, the more you build your skills of hook spotting, unhooking, and refocusing in that context. You can show this in brain scans. People's brain scans change within a couple of weeks and keep on changing when we practice mindfulness because we're using our attention in a particular way and our brain spots that and starts to put resources into that activity. And finally, to further re-emphasize, you're the best person to decide what types of mindfulness practice suit you the best. And experiment with all of this. Be creative. Discover what kind of mindfulness is for you. I really like this notion of mindfulness. You just can't get it wrong. And in my teaching work around teaching mindfulness, it's just a lovely thing for people who've struggled with all kinds of stuff that they've tried to do in their life and maybe felt failure, that actually you cannot get mindfulness wrong because it's about when you are able to spot what's hooked your attention, then we spot what's hooked our attention and practice bringing our attention back. But when we can't spot what's hooked our attention because we're lost in stuff, you can't practice mindfulness at that moment. So you're not getting it wrong because you're not able to do it at that moment. So when we're able to do it, it's something we can do. And there's a sense of kind of ease and playfulness maybe that can come out of this. I would say if you were to practice mindfulness, think about where you can do it in the low intensity situations in your life first. Where have you got the most resources, most at ease? Even if things are generally pretty intense for you, there's probably something, some situation you do where things are a little less intense. That's the place to practice. And then having become familiar with mindfulness in that context, it can grow out into other situations maybe that are somewhat more intense. Trying to practice mindfulness in the middle of what's really intense is like learning to swim by jumping the deep end. We need to start in the shallow end and slowly work up to using it in the most intense situations. Thank you for your time today. For further links and resources, please refer to the lecture delivery page below. Don't forget to claim your CPD certificate for this presentation.